Good morning, afternoon, evening, to wherever you are listening to our podcast from. This is Caitlin, Armand, Amira, and Talisa, and we hope you are having a wonderful day and that you and your family are staying safe and healthy.
As students living through a pandemic, we are often overloaded with information on social media, in classes, on the news, etc., especially in terms of COVID over the past year. So we came together today to try to formulate a one-stop shop for COVID vaccine information and education.
With that, let's start with some good and hopeful COVID-19 news. According to the CDC, over 27 million doses of the COVID-19 vaccine had been administered as of February 5th, which is more than the amount of people that are COVID positive on a given day. With that, let's jump right into the podcast.
Before we dive into our podcast, let's define vaccines. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention defines a vaccine as a product that stimulates the person's immune system to produce immunity to a specific disease, protecting the person from that disease. Vaccines are usually administered through needle injections, but can also be administered by mouth or sprayed into the nose. And the World Health Organization emphasizes that vaccines are critical to the prevention and control of infectious disease outbreaks. They underpin global health security and will be a vital tool in the battle against antimicrobial resistance.
Thanks so much for the information, Talisa. So I don't know about you guys, but one thing that I found when talking to friends and family in regards to the COVID vaccine and vaccines in general is this fear or concern rooted in not knowing what is being injected into your body and what it does, which I want to take a moment to validate because that is a completely normal response. It's natural to want to know what is going into our bodies and what happens after a vaccine is injected. So let's take a moment to break down the mechanics of exactly what happens once the COVID-19 vaccine is injected into your arm. Let's start with the type of vaccine. As of now, there are two vaccines that are authorized by the FDA. These include the Pfizer, BioNTech, and Moderna vaccines, both of which are mRNA vaccine. So what is an mRNA vaccine? Because this is something I definitely did not know 6 months ago. So mRNA is a single strand of DNA. In the vaccine, this single strand is injected into our bodies and serves as an instructional guide for our cells. Once the mRNA is injected via the vaccine, it travels to the cytoplasm in our cells and tells the ribosomes how to make something called a spike protein. This spike protein is also found on the outside of a COVID-19 cell. The spike protein serves as a kind of COVID mugshot, meaning it shows our cells what the outside of a COVID-19 virus looks like. So if we become infected, our immune system will quickly recognize the virus and attack. To clarify, the mRNA doesn't teach our cells how to make a coronavirus, just a specific, harmless, but recognizable piece of it. Once your cells produce these spike proteins, your immune system will recognize them as a foreign body and begin to attack and get rid of them, taking note of what they look like in the process. While it is common for individuals to experience normal immune responses, such as headache or swelling at the injection site, it is important to remember that this is not a response to us becoming sick from coronavirus. It is rather a normal immune response to just the spike protein. Hopefully, this gives a little insight to the mechanics of how the current COVID vaccines work, and I would encourage everyone to check out the CDC website for more information. With that, I'm going to pass it over to Armand, who is going to explain the history of how these COVID vaccines were produced.
Thank you so much, Caitlin. As we dive into the story of COVID-19 vaccine, we come across the first important step in developing a new type of vaccine, which is vaccine trials. The general stages of the development cycle of a vaccine are exploratory stage, preclinical stage, clinical development, regulatory review, and approval. Clinical development is a three-phase process. During phase one, small groups of people receive the trial vaccine. In phase 2, the clinical study is expanded and vaccines are given to people who have characteristics such as age and physical health similar to those for whom the new vaccine is intended. In phase 3, the vaccine is given to thousands of people and tested for efficacy and safety. People have the option to participate in the trials voluntarily, and researchers sometimes would request some people they think are suitable for the trial, but everybody has the option to decline or accept the request, and nothing is mandatory. After the completion of the trials, and as long as the data comes out with the ideal success percentage results, the trials are positive and the COVID vaccine can become available. On November 9th, Pfizer and BioNTech announced that they have performed an interim analysis of an ongoing randomized controlled trial which more than 43,000 volunteers from diverse backgrounds. Their vaccine was found to be more than 90% effective in preventing COVID-19, which is very impressive and is better than the average influenza vaccine and better than the 50% threshold set by the World Health Organization for an effective vaccine. Now I'm going to pass it over to Talisa, and she would expand on the herd immunity aspects.
Thank you so much for this valuable information, Armand. To continue discussing this topic, it's important to discuss herd immunity. Herd immunity is when a large portion of a population is immune to the infectious disease. This offers indirect protection from the disease by making the spread of it from person to person unlikely. And it offers this protection to those who are not immune, do not have access to the vaccine, or simply refuse to receive the vaccine. However, a certain percentage of the population needs to be vaccinated or immune in order for herd immunity to essentially work. According to Mayo Clinic, a percentage of the population must be capable of getting the disease in order for it to spread. This is called a threshold proportion. And if the proportion of the population that is immune to the disease is greater than this threshold, the spread of it will decline. This is known as the herd immunity threshold. Moreover, the percentage varies by disease and is dependent on factors such as the infectiousness of a disease. The more contagious, the greater the proportion of the population needs to be immune. For COVID-19, about 80 to 95% of the population needs to be vaccinated to reach herd immunity. Vaccines help form herd immunity because it's not only protective over the individual, but it also reduces infectiousness. Without the help of herd immunity, there may be a constant outbreaks of COVID-19, cases of unemployment will continue to rise, hospitals will continue to be swamped, essential workers overworked, and overall a delay to getting back to our day-to-day life. While vaccines do provide immunity, immunity does not always come as a result of the vaccine. Immunity can come from natural infection. For example, before the introduction of the varicella vaccine in 1995, families would have chickenpox parties for their children. These parties were a result of a child being infected with chickenpox, and the goal was to get immunity for the neighboring children, especially before the start of the academic year. However, COVID-19 is much deadlier than chickenpox, and it's not easily controlled. Therefore, seeking immunity by intentionally getting infected is irresponsible and can cost the lives of many in the community.
Thank you so much for that breakdown of herd immunity, Talisa. It's exciting to understand how we can learn from both mistakes of past pandemics to improve vaccine rollout this time. My name is Amira, and I will interview our other podcast hosts, my peers at UCLA, for the next segment of our podcast. Okay, for our first question, has anyone been vaccinated, and what have your experiences been with that so far?
It's actually a really good coincidence because I've been just vaccinated today. In terms of my experience, I feel like getting the COVID-19 vaccine, the steps are like any other vaccines. Now, since there's a lot of people that want to get vaccinated, it's a drive-through vaccination, at least for the site that I went to. They let me stay there for 15 minutes, and they want to see if I show any type of reaction to the vaccine.
That's awesome to hear, Armand. That's a pretty cool coincidence. Going into our next question, I know that a lot of us are on social media. I was wondering whether you guys felt like the content that you've recently been seeing on social media has encouraged or discouraged or kind of been neutral towards vaccination.
So the content that I've seen on social media has been really encouraging towards the vaccine. Granted, I do follow a lot of people who do have liberal ideas and points of views. But even the people who were initially skeptical of the vaccine, I think they've come around and they're actually looking forward to getting the vaccine.
I would agree. I've seen a lot of encouragement to get the vaccine and also education around the vaccine, not only from like CDC's social media,
but also from peers.
Another thing with social media that I really appreciate during the vaccination season, if you will, is celebrities, when they go to get vaccinated, will post. And I think that's super encouraging.
Yeah, Caitlin, that's a really good point. I didn't think about how celebrities have such a large audience and can make have the possibility to make such a large impact by simply posting something as easy as just like them getting vaccinated. Kind of looking towards post-herd immunity lifestyle, my next question is whether you guys have kind of experienced or seen a change in social life and whether you've seen people in your close circles starting to gather in larger groups and feel more comfortable not being as extreme with social distancing measures.
I feel like as we move in time, people just get more comfortable. Specifically after people get vaccinated, then there's going to be just this comfort feeling of having gatherings and getting close together.
Yeah, so my friends and I still haven't hung out in person. We still text each other like things that we want to do. And we're like, after the pandemic, we're going to do this, this, and this. But we haven't seen each other in person.
These are all wonderful points that I want to echo. And I think just going back to what Armand said earlier about how once people get vaccinated, they feel secure in their own health and think that, you know, it's okay for them to go socialize with people that are not necessarily vaccinated and could then be at risk. And that kind of goes back to some like larger problems with the way that vaccination rollout is going. A lot of the groups that are excluded often are groups that are more marginalized or just like don't have access. Thank you for letting me pepper you guys with questions. Everyone has had quite unique experiences with this intermediate period where we wait for herd immunity, and it was really great to hear all your perspectives.
Up next, we are going to welcome Dr. Daryl Werner. He graduated from USC Medical School, but we will forgive him because he did his residency at Harbor UCLA, so go Bruins! To start us off, could you please share a little bit about yourself and what you do in medicine?
Hey, great. Thanks for having me, Caitlin. I'm a physician. I've been in practice for 33 years. I did go to USC, fight on, but I did my residency in emergency medicine at Harbor UCLA. So I also have allegiance to the Bruins. So there you go. Half of my career has been in emergency medicine, and the other half I have a specialty in hyperbaric medicine and wound care. Most recently, I've been doing some volunteering at some of the COVID vaccination centers in Long Beach and in Orange County, so I have a little bit of insight into what's going on at that level, too.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for volunteering. So let's hop into the first question. Why is it important for college students to get the vaccine?
Younger people, when they get infected with COVID, tend not to have as serious illnesses as older people. But the problem is that younger people come into contact with older people, and they're capable of spreading it to your teachers, to the older people you're around, to your parents, to your grandparents. So not so much to protect yourself, even though younger people do get sick and do have complications and even deaths, but to protect those around you. And the goal that we're trying to accomplish is something called herd immunity, where if enough people in the community have immunity, either through vaccination or through an infection with COVID, that the virus will not be transmitted effectively and will start to basically just disappear.
So what I'm hearing is that it's a group effort to achieve herd immunity. And by taking the COVID vaccine, college students are not only protecting themselves, but also protecting the people around them and the greater community. So as a follow-up, what advice would you give to a college student who is nervous or hesitant to get the vaccine?
I think that some people will say this has been rushed and the vaccine has come out and developed in a short time, but the vaccine that they've prepared, and the most common ones are the Pfizer vaccine and the Moderna, although there's a new one that's just been approved from Johnson & Johnson. They've gone through rigorous clinical trials. I think that the trials had 30 and 40,000 people. They watched them for a couple of months afterwards. The number of side effects and the methodology that they used to prepare the vaccine was all within reasonable limits.
Speaking to that topic, you brought up several of the different vaccines. Is there a difference in terms of which one is best for college students?
I'm not aware that there being any advantages for different age groups. The Pfizer and Moderna vaccinations are both 95% effective. The Johnson & Johnson is a little less, which is 85%, but as vaccines go, even 85% is a tremendous effect from a vaccination.
So between Pfizer and Moderna, the message is to get vaccinated. They both work and are both effective.
And they're both safe. But in medicine, we always look at things called risk-benefit. The benefit side here of not getting sick or not spreading COVID to people you care about or even people you don't know you're spreading it to way outweighs the small number of side effects that we see.
Another question I've heard a lot from my peers is, can you still get or transmit COVID after receiving one of the vaccines?
The answer to that is yes, but if you do get it, your sickness will be much, much milder. You're much less likely to wind up in the hospital, and you're much, much less likely to die from a COVID infection. You're also less likely to spread it. There's a concept that we call viral load. If you do get infected, or you do carry it, even if you're an asymptomatic carrier, the amount of virus that you actually carry in your body is lower. The more virus you have, the more likely you are to spread the virus to someone around you.
Once someone has gotten their vaccine, what protocols should they follow after getting vaccinated?
In all of the vaccines, you don't get immediate protection from the first shot. It takes about 2 weeks to get some immunity from that first shot. And then if you get a Pfizer or Moderna, it'll take 2 weeks after the second shot to reach that stated 95% protection. They're now saying if you've been vaccinated and you can socialize with other people who've also been vaccinated after the appropriate waiting time with almost no risk.
So during those first few weeks after getting your first or second dose, we should still take protective measures after getting the vaccine. One last question before we go is if there is anything else you think is important for college students to know about COVID or the COVID vaccines.
Yeah, I want everybody to know. My own personal feeling on everything I'm reading and stuff is that this is going to pass and life is going to return to some kind of normal in not too long a time. But I think there are some lessons here that I think all of us are going to be more careful and more aware of infectious diseases. And I think that that's going to benefit all of us.
I would agree. I think there's a lot to learn from this pandemic that we could take with us and apply going forward. Thank you so much for joining us today and for all of that insight. We really appreciate it. And stay safe. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. Take care.
Something strange in your neighborhood. Who you gonna call?
COVID Busters!
All right. Welcome to Mythbusters. So what we did is we found some common myths and facts about COVID-19 and posted them as polls on our Instagram stories. Granted, and fair warning, this may not be completely representative of the entire UCLA community. It is mostly just friends and peers. That being said, the first question was, if I've already had COVID-19, I don't need a vaccine. We had 98% said myth and 2% said fact. And in fact, it is a myth. Reinfection has proven to be possible, and there are now many different variations of COVID-19. So health professionals advise that even those who have had COVID get vaccinated.
Our second statement that we polled was COVID-19 vaccines must be stored at extremely low temperatures because of preservatives in the vaccines. Our poll data showed that 31% of people thought this was a myth and 69% of people thought this was a fact. But this is in fact a myth. The vaccines do have very different storage requirements, and many of them are at very low temperatures. So, for example, Pfizer must be stored at negative 94 degrees Fahrenheit, but they need to be stored at super low temperatures because the mRNA is quite fragile and can break down easily, not because of the preservatives in the vaccines.
The third myth that we polled Instagram followers on is the vaccines were developed much faster than past vaccines. 26% said that it was a myth, while 74% said that it was true. The answer is true. COVID-19 vaccines were developed rapidly compared with earlier vaccines because scientists, doctors, and government agencies all over the world invested massive resources to cut red tape. The CDC is carefully tracking all adverse reactions, and they have been rare, about 4 cases per 1 million doses.
Last question poll that we had was, if I'm vaccinated, I can't transmit COVID-19 to people who are not vaccinated. 89% said that it's a myth and 11% said it's a fact. It is false. After being vaccinated, you can still contract and transmit COVID, but the rates will be much lower. Something strange
in your neighborhood. Now we're going to kind of head into the concluding segment of our podcast today. So far, we've given a bunch of definitions and explanations about vaccines and herd immunity. You may feel a bit drained and overwhelmed, but that's completely normal. And it may be because a lot of us have never experienced a pandemic, so there is a lot of sensory and information overload. However, we really cannot turn a blind eye on our social responsibility to follow guidelines. There may also be a substantial portion of you who may not feel the social pressure to follow guidelines because you don't know someone who has suffered or died from COVID-19. But there have been over 500,000 deaths in the United States alone and over 2.5 million deaths worldwide, meaning that your actions can either save a life or take one away, and it's really up to you to make a difference. Currently, UCLA Health is in phase 1B of the state's current distribution plan and is allowing essential workers 16 to 64 with jobs in education and childcare, emergency services, and food and agriculture to receive the vaccine. As of March 1st, all UCLA employees are eligible for vaccination as part of the education and childcare sector. These advancements bring excitement and a sliver of light at the end of the tunnel. UCLA aims to have mostly in-person classes in fall of 2021, and this brings us to further questions. Should vaccinations be mandatory for all individuals who choose to come back to campus this fall? How will institutions enforce this? How can we all spread information about the vaccine to decrease fear-mongering? These are awesome details that we can continue to think about as a community. We wanted to thank you all for joining us today. Hopefully you found today's podcast both entertaining and informative. Stay healthy, wear your masks, and come back next week to learn about how this public health crisis continues to evolve.